Brian Jones. I'm an alcoholic. And we're glad to be here and definitely glad to be sober. I'd like to thank Kristen for inviting me to share my story. And I hope that something I say will keep one of you sober for another 24 hours, because that's pretty much the name of the game. Anyway, let me kind of go through what they told me to do early on. It's my experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, I was born in Chicago in 1956. So that makes me 60 years old. And I was in a large family, 10 kids. And boy, there was a lot of what they call socialization that, you know, it was kind of like more like you had to grab your own or otherwise it was going to be taken from you. So I learned early on that this kind of underlying feeling of, I guess, inadequacy that never seemed to be filled. It always seemed like, how come they have more than I do? And it wasn't until much later, by working the steps of this program, that I realized that that was kind of the beginning of my alcoholism. That I truly believe that I didn't drink my way into alcoholism. I think I kind of arrived at this planet with an alcoholic disease. So what happened, kind of going through that, was I got introduced to alcohol at a pretty, well, early age, I think. I was about 6 years old. And when I took that first drink, that was like magic. I thought I'd found the answer to all my problems. And it's kind of sick to think that a six-year-old would have a lot of problems. But again, if you're an alcoholic, it says in the book that the disease center's mostly in your mind. You know, so that release that I found by taking booze was great. You know, I thought I knew immediately that we were going to hook up again. I didn't know when or how long it would take, but I knew for sure that that was the answer. Which was not the right way to go. I know after that, after surviving that for nearly 40 years, that that was part of the disease. You know, it tells me that I don't have it. You know, I don't have a problem. That all I need is for the rest of humanity to kind of do what I think you should be doing. And then I'll be okay on the inside. And that is still with me. You know, that behavior still gets some airtime in, you know, my thinking. Which is why I go to a lot of meetings and I'm willing to do this program to the best of my ability on a daily basis. So, let's see, kind of getting back to my early development years, I went to this disease, or my behavior, got me to some discipline type problems in school. I was kind of always like acting out. I guess clinically they said that I wanted to be, have attention, and I couldn't get, I'm not blaming anybody, but looking back at home, I probably didn't get that much attention unless I was acting out. So as a result, I got into social problems. You know, it's like I could probably have done a lot better at school if I wasn't so busy trying to stand out, you know, to get that recognition. As time went on, I got... I was pretty clever about getting booze. You know, that's one thing I think all of us have in common. We're pretty intelligent people. You know, I think we have to be to stay drunk. You know, it takes a lot of work. For me, drinking was not like a pastime. It was like a full-time career, you know? And looking back, that, you know, it was amazing that I was willing to put up with that. You know, that was, it's beyond comprehension and what we put ourselves through. Again, getting back to childhood, you know, I would act out, and my parents kind of thought, they weren't sure exactly what was wrong with me. You know, actually, I was born in a pretty strict Catholic family, and my parents were pretty sure they wanted me to become a priest. You know, and that fell apart early on. In my grammar school, that I don't think I was going to be a priest. And what I found was that that kind of brought upon, like, you know, again, I guess it's called an ego feeding proposition, that I was probably less than the rest of my family because I wasn't going to live up to expectations, which I find that's it's another one of my, challenges that this program allows me to live with, is this thing called the ego. And if you're not sure what that is, that's usually, for me, it's usually the first voice that pops up. It has this great idea, or always has some kind of demand, saying that, you know, I should be able to get that, but how come I don't have it? Which I learned that by taking or ingesting large amounts of alcohol, that I could, like, well, get around that feeling like things weren't going my way. And I would do that a lot. It's with some pretty progressively more intense results. Which, like, if that was any kind of other behavior that I had, sooner or later, I think early on, I would decide I wasn't going to do that anymore, which is a, it's part of, you know, my dis-ease. And they say in the book that, it's in chapter 3, they talk about, it's in more about alcoholism, that one of the characteristics of our drinking is that we think that we're going to control and enjoy our drinking. And that, you know, is pretty, you know, like, yeah, that sounds like not that bad, but it is. And no matter how bad or how obvious the results were, that I could never control and enjoy my drinking at the same time, I would always somehow rebound, saying, you know, yeah, you know, I got spent a night in jail, but, you know, maybe that's not that bad. You know, I think I know what I did wrong. You know, I shouldn't have had the shots before I had the beer or something, and I would make it work. And that, there was never an end to that, which is, again, I guess if you're new here, that first step, for me and for a lot of people, that's really can kill you if you don't get that. If I never lived long enough, and I think that's how I sum up my contribution to my sobriety, is I lived long enough to realize that I don't even think I realized a part greater than myself put the thought in my head that I'm powerless over alcohol, that what I'm doing will kill me. And thank God that happened, you know, because I know people that are active in the disease, and they just keep going. You know, this disease is 100% fatal. The only problem is it's not real reliable. You never know when it's going to take you out. Yeah, I am forever grateful that I lived long enough to do that. And again, if you're new here, you know, please keep coming back. You know, I progressed, you know, to a point that, you know, the state of California and a couple of other establishments, you know, highly recommended that I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I vaguely remember the first time, you know, and this just really kind of appeared in my head, you know, when I was looking back, the first time I went to AA, I think I was like 16 years old. And it was, again, back in Chicago. And back then, they didn't really, like, it wasn't such a big thing to be caught drunk driving. I don't know what it was, you know, it's just like, just don't do that and go to court and pay a fine. And it was right before, you know, the judge, actually it was one of the court attendants, they said, you know, we think you have a problem and here's a place to go and go there and report back. And I can remember going there and, of course, I was sure this was not for me, you know, it's just, I just went, you know. And there was a guy speaking up there, and, you know, I sat way in the back, and I distinctly remember how he was talking on how his disease was going. He said that, you know, he'd get up in the morning, get ready to go to work, and then he would say, well, I'm just going to stop at the bar and have one waiting for the bus, you know. And then, you know, the bus would come, and then he would have another one, and then he would figure, well, shit, it's way too late for me to make it to work, so I might as well just stay at the bar and drink. You know, which to some people, they think, my ego immediately said, well, that's not me. I'm not an alcoholic because I don't even go into bars, you know. That couldn't be me, and I would make sure I went to work. So, again, this disease, again, if you're trying to get sober or you've been sober, one of the main symptoms of alcoholism is denial. That I don't think I have a problem. And there's an acronym for denial that I like to share with people that I help, because it stands for don't even notice I am lying. And that's because I would always rationalize shit. It's like, yeah, this is that I just bad luck or whatever. And that would always keep me like, not even taking a look at maybe this is a serious problem or even a problem at all. I really, for decades, I thought that maybe I just had bad luck. You know, that was it. Again, going back, God, the creative intelligence, the universe, was kind of nudging me into Alcoholics Anonymous to say, you know, maybe you should take a closer look at this. And for whatever reason, it didn't click with me. I thought I had a better way. Like they say in the book, you know, I had an easier, softer way. And so I pursued that. And another one of the things of this disease is that they say, you know, this is a progressive disease. It doesn't like stop and take a vacation and then, you know, come back 10 years later. This is, you know, day after day, things would start getting worse, little by little. And what happens with that is I would realize things were going, like, not the right way, but I was willing to accept a new normal. You know, it's like you probably heard the old thing, you know, I can't be an alcoholic because I don't drink before noon. Or, you know, I don't do this because I can't be an alcoholic. And if you play this game long enough, you get to that point. You know, it's like, oh, well, it's noon somewhere or whatever, you know. Or, gee, I think, you know, whatever kind of obscure, probably insane thought would say, like, I'm still cool, don't worry, I'm good. And I had to keep doing that until, there was no end. You know, I was going to keep going to the bitter end. Luckily, I don't know, luckily or not, I was able to, I got to a point eventually that my standard of living was dropping faster than I could adjust to it. And that you know, I don't like calling that a bottom. I call that like a ledge, because I know there's still a long way to go. You know, this disease doesn't want you homeless. It doesn't want you broke. It doesn't care if you lost the family or whatever. It's really not done until you're dead. You know, that's its bottom. And that's really the bottom that you know, I'm going to end up at. If I pick up a drink, that's kind of what I'm signing up for. So, you know, knowing that now, I am forever grateful that forces beyond my control, i.e. the state of California, whatever, pushed me to AA. You know, it's like, go over there, and even if you don't like it, just keep doing that. And so I would, I was doing that on and off for decades, in between DUIs and stuff like that. I would, you know, I'd go to AA and say, yeah, well, thank God I'm cured now, because DMV gave me my license back. You know, I got to be okay. They say I'm good. And that again, was just the rationalization that would keep me on the fringe of reality. You know, it's like I'm still okay. That kept going, and till, let's see, that was 1999. I kind of struggled through that. Again, by this time, I was married at the time. I had a son. Things were difficult. That's one thing that really suffers, you know, is they say in the book, we're not that good at relationships to start with. And introduce booze, that makes for some pretty unsatisfactory type situations. How I kind of got nudged in, I remember I kind of got in a fight with my wife at the time, and of course it was because I was drinking, and I was not supposed to be drinking, because I was I had been sober in the past, and that would last until I thought I was okay, and then I would start drinking again, which you know, again, this is what I said, a progressive illness. And as I the more I would drink, it wasn't just the drinking, now I had the whole behavior thing. I had to manipulate people. I had to figure out how I was going to get that first drink. And it was exhausting, you know, I'd be overwhelmed and it'd only be like 7 o'clock in the morning. Like, how am I going to get all this done? I came home. I'd been drinking on the way home because I couldn't drink in the house. So I drink and drive. That was my solution. You know, it's just like, this is how we're going to make this work. Got in, and my wife at the time said, you know, we got in some kind of argument, and she knew I'd been drinking, so she took my keys. And what I did was I took her keys and jumped in her car and drove off. And all I wanted to do was just make it to this nearby liquor store and get a couple of martinis and sit on the side of the road, and, you know, I would figure out, I developed the plan from there, because that would work. And that didn't happen. I had gotten the CHP, whoever came up, and, you know, they could tell pretty much immediately that I'd been drinking. And so they brought me in, did the blood test, and it wasn't until later, you know, I was kind of baffled. Like, I didn't even think I was drunk. And, you know, the lawyer told me, you know, I was like a 1.8, you know, on the blood alcohol. And I could have sworn, you know, being an alcoholic, I go, man, I don't know how I got stopped, because I know I've been much more drunk than that driving. And so That started the beginning of, that was towards the end of my drinking career. What ended up after that was fines, going to DUI school again. They told me I had to go to like an outpatient rehab. And so I thought, well, all right, I'll do it. You know, I'll just go and, you know, just to get them off my back. And so I was going to this, it was a 6-week outpatient. And I was going, I got my license back. And I would go and in the fifth week of the 6-week thing, I thought, you know, I'd been doing so good that at break, I'd go out to the liquor store and get like 5 martinis and down them real quick. Because, you know, I was doing pretty good. I was doing good in the class. I was making friends and everything. And the counselor, you know, called me on it. And he said, Joe, you know, I think you're shit-faced, you know. And you know you're in an alcohol rehab? And my initial thought was, what an asshole, you know. Why is he calling me on this, you know? I'm trying to do everything that he's asked and all this other stuff. And it's amazing, you know, in God's time, for some reason, shortly after that, I realized, or the thoughts started coming into my mind, that I'm powerless over alcohol. For some reason, the dots lined up, the few dots that I had left, and said, you know, you're on a DUI, you're still like on probation, you got your license back and you're drinking and driving, and not only that, you're drinking inside of a rehab, and, you know, that seems weird, you know, it's like, why are you doing that? In fact, but I still wasn't, you know, and they're like, I'll figure this out, and I went to have a drink on the way home after that event, and for some reason I was drinking, and I didn't finish that drink. And they're like, it just didn't taste right, and something was wrong. I thought I was getting sick or something. But the next day, I came to realize that everything that I'd been doing, if I continued doing it, I was going to lose everything I had. In fact, inside, deep inside, it felt like I had already lost everything. But it still was there, but I was definitely going to lose it. All my material, whatever. And I thought that for a brief second that, my God, I'm wrong. I can't drink alcohol. And, thank God I'd been around Alcoholics Anonymous, being kind of shoved into it. And I went to a meeting. There was a meeting. It was a Saturday night meeting. And I'd been kind of, going to meetings because that was a good time I could drink, is when I went to meetings. And I think everyone knew it, but they didn't, like, call me. You know, they'd say, yeah, just keep coming back. You know, that's all they would say. And when they asked who was new, you know, I'd been going like 10, 15, 20 days without raising my hand. And I think everyone knew. But for some reason, my hand went up. You know, and I'm like, what? Whoa. And nobody, like, kicked me out of the, you know, I thought they were going to tell me, get out, you know, you've been lying to us or something. And they didn't. You know, they were glad that I was there. And I'm glad we're all here tonight because I truly believe if you're an alcoholic and you're not drinking today, you're making the world a better place, far better place. So at that meeting, I was kind of like in a, I don't know, I was like, what did I just do? You know, like, and I was kind of walking out of the meeting, and somebody gave me a real profound statement that still sticks with me today. He said, Joe, I'm glad you're here, and the program works better if you don't drink. And I can tell you that is true. Yeah. And thank God from that day on, I haven't had to take a drink of alcohol. And that was February 26, 2000. And that seems, if you would have told me on that day, that Saturday, that I would be able to go even like a couple weeks without taking a drink, I would say, how? What, do you got a new drug or something? Or, you know, because there was no power within me to resist taking a drug, taking a drink. And, you know, I, again, was blessed enough to be in around AA. And I thought, well, what do I have to lose? Maybe I'll do what these people are saying. You know, and they said, come to a meeting every day and don't drink in between meetings. And I thought, well, I guess I could do that, you know. And so I did. I made time. It actually became a priority for me to go to a meeting and not drink in between meetings. Or even better, don't drink on the way to the meeting, because that's usually what I would be doing. And little by little, I began to realize, like, hey, I think, I don't know how this is happening, but I'm able to go 24 hours without a drink. Which, my sponsor told me to read the book and read it more than once. And in the book, there's a number of promises that are listed or given throughout the book. And what I found, one of the promises, it says that we'll realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And boy, that was like, that kind of lit up like right away. It's like, wow. I went a whole day without a drink of alcohol, and I wasn't in jail, and I wasn't like, or, you know, in a rehab or anything. I could have walked out at any time and got some, and I didn't, and I was amazed. I thought for sure that maybe I was dreaming, and but the next day I got up, and by that time, it was a couple days later, I actually got a sponsor. That's what they told me to do. And, you know, he told me to read page 86 in the book. And, you know, it says on awakening that I should ask God to direct my thinking. It doesn't say ask God to keep me away from booze. And it says God to direct my thinking, to keep it separate from self-pity, dishonest and self-seeking motives, which I find if I can do that on a daily basis, just just be aware of self-pity at any given moment, because that seems to crop up a lot in my my daily thoughts. I like to say, you know, I'm my own favorite topic in my head, and that is usually what's going on up there, which, again, is my dis-ease. That's what causes me to think, like, if you had my life, you would drink too, you know. So, that's what these steps do incrementally. Give me what I was seeking through alcohol. You know, I didn't drink. I drank for the effect. And the effect was that I would be in oblivion. I didn't drink. I didn't drink because, you know, I liked the taste or I thought it was social or anything like that. I would drink to be off the planet and then come back. Which later I found that what I was really doing wasn't drinking. It's more like suicide without the commitment is what I was doing. You know, I could drink and whatever happened, I didn't give a shit. You know, it's okay. And then, you know, it's so. And until I was sober enough to realize that, it seemed like perfectly normal that's what I would do. So again, as I do what my sponsor had recommended to me was to find a power greater than myself, which may, you know, again, that I had some trouble getting warmed up to that idea, being in a like pretty regimented religious type environment. But I found that, of course, there's a God. I mean, how else would I be on this planet? How else would anyone be on the planet if there wasn't a creative intelligence, God, whatever, that whatever you want to call it. But that that is exactly what I need to allow into my life. And if I do that on a daily basis, the more I do that on a daily basis, the better days I have. The great thing is that when I don't do that, I know immediately that I'm not doing it. You know, there's like a, whoa, what am I, you know. And I learned that here in Alcoholics Anonymous, that, the guys and girls that wrote these things, they knew that we have this thing called perfectionism, at least I do. If I can't do something perfectly, I'm not sure I want to do it at all, you know. So that's why they kind of say, you know, progress, not perfection. And if I go through the day and I slip up or I find that things are not going right, I can stop and take a look at what I'm doing, which is, again, not a natural behavior for me. What I prefer to do is kind of see what's wrong with you people. That's my first instinct, is to see how come you're not doing what I'm thinking, you know. And by doing that type of behavior, it creates suffering for me, and probably a lot of people around me. So just like it says in the literature that. And this is always one that makes me kind of swallow pretty hard. It's like whenever I'm disturbed, no matter whatever reason, there's something wrong with me. And, you know, the primary thing is the thing that's wrong with me is that I'm letting you detect my well-being. And they're like, holy crap, that's right. You know, I don't know, but if you notice there's like close to 8 billion people on the planet, and I'm going to say, any one of you 8 billion people can ruin my day? That's not a good odds at all that I can manage it. So I approach each day with a degree of humility. It's like I basically say that what's happening or what is, because if I try to say, you know, that shouldn't be happening, or I don't like that, what I'm doing is like building this thing called a resentment. That you know, something that already is, I'm going to go and try to change that from being there. Which, you know, for one thing, it uses a lot of my time in my head, you know, to try and change things, which. I've learned not to do that, basically why that second step is in place. Like right after the first step, like the second step is, Joe, at any moment, your thinking can be taking you to the next drink, is really where it's taking you. And again, I would not be able to do that unless I kind of have to agree to myself that I have a disease that is constantly there. It doesn't take any vacations, and I'm pretty damn sure that it wakes up 15 minutes before I do, and it's ready. It's ready to tell me how I can, I call it my plan of world domination, and how that's going to work today. And if I start believing that story, I'm heading towards, first I'm going to be heading towards like a crappy day. And if I keep it up, you know, I can have bad months and years by doing that. Eventually, if I keep that up, it says in the book that we kind of entertain these things called resentments too long. We shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit, and the insanity of alcohol returns. that means like, hey, maybe that's a good idea to pick up a drink, you know? And if I drink, and that might be okay for like 80% of the people on the planet that don't have my disease, but for me, to pick up a drink is to die. Or to wish I was dead, you know, one of the two. So that introduces, or that the program, again, points out many different ways that I need to be willing to change my behavior on a minute-to-minute basis. That's I like how they, in both the steps and the traditions, the last thing they kind of talk about is principles and personalities, you know. My personality, if I let run loose, it'll get me drunk. You know, principles say, yeah, we know you don't really think this is a good idea, but this is what we're going to do. And it pays off. In fact, if you're, again, new here, or kind of having a problem like with the steps or anything, believe me, none of these steps are like my first idea, you know. I would say, like to tell people I'm helping is that when I first got sober, I tell my sponsor says, are you willing to go to any length to stay sober? And I said, yeah, as long as I agree with it. And that, I didn't say that to him. I said, oh yeah. And then under my breath, as long as I agree with it. And that is, I found that unless I'm willing to do things that I don't agree with, those the things that I don't agree with that I do anyway change my life. That's where I actually get liberation, you know, from the book calls it the bondage of self. You know, I call it the itty-bitty shitty committee, anything you want to call it. It's that dis-ease in my head. So today I'm willing to, in any given moment, to say, yeah, well, I'm willing to do something different right now. And if I do that, I have good days, you know. No matter what's going on externally, it's inside, I can be okay, which is the exact opposite of the way my disease likes it. My disease wants me to think, as soon as everything outside is cool, then you'll be okay inside. And I don't know, I don't think that would ever work. I know it doesn't work for me because the 7 billion people on the planet just won't do what I want them to do. I can do one thing, though. I can change myself if I'm willing to do it. There's two ways to get there. One took me 46 years to figure out that I cannot drink alcohol. So there's a phrase, you know, why waste a good crisis? You know, I can go ahead and I can figure out, like, you know, I cannot control people, places, and things. So why don't I just let them be and work on, you know, be okay with what is, as opposed to trying to change what already is. So, you know, there's a couple of things that this program really encourages. And the one thing for me that I found very helpful is forgiveness. In fact, there's a book I read. It's called Shortcuts to God. And this guy was one of us. And he wrote this book. And he said that the quickest shortcut to God is forgiveness. And his definition of forgiveness was to abandon all hope of a better past. And if I can do that, then I'm good, you know, because my mind will try to redo something that's already passed. And that's kind of, that's a spiritual problem, a spiritual dilemma, which this program allows me to address, you know, one day at a time. Really, one breath at a time for me. I find that the more I keep this in the forefront of my thinking and my behavior, the better days I have. let's see. So, again, what it's like now, I kind of scattered and jumping all over. today. I do, you know, upon awakening, I ask God. I hook up with a power greater than myself that I don't even know what it is, and I don't even have to. And I like to say, you know, if you're having a problem believing in God, I found out my God doesn't give a shit if I believe in him or not. You know, it's there. And in fact, one of the co-founders, Dr. Bob, he was a physician, and he wrote a prescription, and it said, trust God, clean house, and help others. And, you know, I saw that many years ago, and it wasn't until recently that I saw it said, trust God. I always thought it said, find God. You don't have to find anything, just trust that God is there. And that's, you know, for me, the more I work this program, the more clear it becomes on what I need to do and what happens when I don't do it. So, anyway, I kind of skipped all over the place, but there's, again, in the book, it talks about, it has a number of promises here. I think I'll go ahead and wrap up. There's the main promise for me, and that's in the last page of the book. It says to see that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. And believe me, that has proven to come true for me over and over. So anyway, that's my story, and I appreciate you having me here tonight. Thank you.